His glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. It is 9:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is the 8th of December 2016, and you are tuned to Asia Stream on Radio Sai. We are coming to you live from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanthi Nilayam, India. Current weather conditions in the abode of Supreme Peace are pleasant, with minimum overnight temperature at 18 degrees Celsius and daytime highs of 28 degrees Celsius. General outlook for the day, clear sunny skies all day today, with the possibility of some rain activity starting in the Divine Valley from the Monday of next week. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, your all-day live connection to Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna, and I'd like to begin by offering myself at the lotus feet of the Lord of the Universe, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Apart from being my personal hero, Bhagwan Baba is also the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. On behalf of our entire Radio Sai team here, that includes those of us you often hear and others who work diligently behind the scenes, please accept our loving good morning and Sai Ram. Here's what's making news in your true home, that is Prashanthi Nilayam. We are now in the second week of the glorious month of December, and the influx of Christmas revelers is quite obvious in our ashram. I noticed a lot of new faces from the Western Hemisphere in the Divine Valley, and also a lot of our regular winter birds who come to Prashanthi every year to celebrate the holiest day in the Christian calendar from everywhere. Now, these include people from hilly parts of India, North India, and our neighboring countries such as Nepal, and also from around the world. As you may know, a large number of Christians from states that celebrate Christmas quite excitedly and in a very grand way, such as Kerala, as well as from about 121 countries, gather in Prashanthi every year to enjoy the celebrations in the holy abode of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Here in Prashanthi, this festival, as you know, is observed in the purest possible manner as Jesus would have approved of. Carols, dramas, decorations, all highlighting the true spirit of Christmas can be found here. And what is a unique aspect of this festival is that not only Christians, but seekers from all faiths join hands in making this celebration a truly universal one. Now, in coming weeks, dear sisters and brothers, we will share with you more insights on the preparations, the decorations, the celebrations associated with this festival. Meanwhile, today, I'm happy to continue part 3, or which is the conclusion of the Trustworthy Divinity interview with Mr. G. Jagannathan of the United States of America. But first, it's time for self-reflection with Mr. K. Chakravarti. And before I leave you to do that, I have a question keeping the season in mind for all our listeners. So you may want to jot down this question and send me your emails very promptly. And I must mention last week's question, I got a correct answer, but a little bit late to announce on the show. So the correct answer was from Madam Rekha Loknath. And I appreciate her responding to and participating in the program, but I missed her name because her email reached me a little late. So please try to send me your email at the earliest. And here is my question for you, which I want you to email me your response at the following email, karuna@radiosai.org. K as in kite, A for apple, R for Robert, U for umbrella, N for Nancy, A for apple, at Radio Sai, one word, R-A-D as in dog, I-O-S-A-I.org. Here comes the question. When Bhagwan explains that Christmas is the festival of joy, J-O-Y, how does he explain the three letters of joy? He says there's a tremendous significance about how life should be prioritized, and it is embedded in the word joy. So how should we prioritize life based on the words or the letters J-O-Y frequently associated with the festival of joy, also known as Christmas? Baba's interpretation of joy is what I'm looking for. Please send me your answers by email. And dear sisters and brothers, do remember to write your full name, your city and your country where you're writing from. With that, it is time for Self-Reflection by Mr. K. Chakravarti, and today it's my pleasure to play for you episode number 5, The World and the Presence. Have a listen, please. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Self-Reflection on Radio Sai. Self-reflection is a unique presentation to honor the 91st birthday anniversary of Bhagwan Baba. In this series, we have Mr. K. Chakravarti, a long-standing devotee and a member of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, read out articles that he has penned for various commemorative volumes that were published during landmark birthdays of our Lord Sai in the period 1990 to 2016. Today, you will hear Mr. Chakravarti share the fifth reflection in this series, entitled The World and the Presence. He had penned it for a special volume of Sai Sparshan in the year 2005. This self-reflection was recorded at the Radio Sai Studios on the 17th of October 2016. And here it is for your inspiration and listening pleasure.
The World and the Presence. Let me begin with a quote from T.S. Eliot. Destiny waits in the hand of God, shaping the still unshapen. I have seen these things in a shaft of sunlight. In this brief article, I have tried to set my general observations regarding the world in the first two pages, and later given expression to my feelings, which have sprung in my heart as grateful response to Swami's presence. Now, please read on, or I shall say, please hear. Is there any generation where men and women have not felt that times have changed, that the old order is yielding place to a new one, that prescription of good conduct and good behavior ought to be changed to suit their times? Allied to this is also a debate in every generation about the meaning of life, God and man, goodness and evil, war and peace. Historically, much has changed, especially in regard to man's conquest over nature. Electricity has revolutionized life in such a fundamental way that night is only an extension of day, and human life on a daily basis is on a totally different trajectory from the pre-electricity era. For men of pre-electricity era, the quality and pace of today's life would have been utterly inconceivable. Similarly, transportation is another field which has altered man's life so hugely that what remained as distant and mysterious land became close and accessible. Communication has put people in instantaneous contact in the world today, so that they know the happenings in any part of the globe as they happen. All in all, there are many areas of human life which have qualitatively changed. Paradoxically, physical togetherness has not resulted in spiritual bonding. There is more that separates people than unites them. Countries and communities have not yet been united so as to attain the brotherhood of man. When travel was time-consuming and arduous, there seemed to have been more of a community life. As travel brings people closer, there is more of a casual relationship, and the key element is not sharing, but mutual convenience. All this makes it clear that physical contact and networking need not necessarily lead to emotional understanding. I do not subscribe to the view that yesterday's world was better than today's, and that there has been a steady decline in values. Human history is replete with instances of aggression, slaughter, ingratitude, chicanery, vengefulness, and utter self-centeredness. Whatever has been the state of external conditions, that is, whether pre-technological or post-technological, human emotions have expressed themselves in a seemingly unaltered pattern. If then we find that the external world has vastly changed, but human nature has remained pretty constant, especially in its insensitivity to fellow human beings, where do we seek a solution? Amongst a large number of people, there is a feeling that what is historically dated is not relevant in today's context. This is true in a number of cases, but it is not entirely so, particularly in the context of human relations, because the driving force in human behavior has shown a persistence in human history. It's recognized that human nature is a mixture of altruism and selfishness, of generosity and meanness, of vengefulness and forgiveness, of nobility and crassness, of love and hatred. It is also recognized that a human being needs to become refined by eschewing the downside qualities, and only in that conscious and consistent process of refinement, collective well-being can be established. I had been struck by these general observations I have made above. As a student of history and politics, I had wondered as to how the world can be a better place for all to live in peace and harmony. At one time I thought that the economic exploitation of the weak was the prime reason for an iniquitous society, then the solution should lie in economic redistributive justice. But unfortunately, history has also revealed that efforts made in that direction resulted in large-scale misery, because the laudable motive of bringing into existence a society of equals soon got corrupted and gave way to an unabashed pursuit of power, resulting in a civic society suffering from an encircling sense of fear. The dream of economic emancipation dissolved into a nightmare of unbearable authoritarianism. At another time, I thought that if the world is to be a better place for all, then there is a need for a genuinely international institution which can reconcile the conflicting claims of nations in a spirit of mutual accommodation and constructive cooperation. But as history unfolds, it is becoming clear that this faith could be misplaced. And granted that nations like individuals are unequal, there can be no greater right than might. I also realized that the peace of the world is uncertain unless men keep the peace of God. Later I thought that if freedom and opportunity are provided, then there could be a release of great energy and power, resulting in a more equal society. Such a society will be characterized by progress based on merit of people and not on the basis of the accident of birth. But soon I found that freedom dwindled into abrasive individualism and opportunity into cultivated nepotism. Granted that there is no equality in nature as such in resource endowments, either of regions or individuals, virtues like balance, stability and mutuality in society ought to be rooted not in the domain of physical strength or emotional realm, but in spiritual reality, because only in spirit that men are equal. It is this vague feeling in me that made me look out for what could be a more plausible area for a genuine betterment of society. I must confess that this remained inarticulate, or at best, half-articulate.
Sai Ram, you're tuned to Radio Sai's special series, Self-Reflection. Currently, you're listening to Mr. K. Chakravarti reading out his article, The World and the Presence, written for a special volume of Sai's Persian in the year 2005. This self-reflection was recorded at the Radio Sai Studios on the 17th of October 2016. Please continue to stay with us for the rest of the narrative.
The encounter with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba and the years that have been spent at his lotus feet, listening to him and reading his works, have thrown a new light on what I took as serious issues of human life. The focus shifted slowly from an assessment of others' role to that of my own role. Am I adding to the problems of the world, or am I contributing even in a small measure to solving them? Swami holds that before reforming or transforming the world, the individual should reform and transform himself. What type of reformation does this involve? If I have to do something for the economic reformation of the poor, then I have to address myself to the reasons which caused the problem in the first instance. The reasons could be multiplication of wants, wasteful use of resources, personal aggrandizement, lack of education and skills, poor health and low productivity, and so on. As a person set on the course of providing relief to the poor, I can reduce my wants by consciously putting a ceiling on desires, treat misuse of money and resources as evil, consciously practice the virtue of selflessness, participate in an education program which enhances skills and strengthens the values of the poor people, and encourage such preventive health care which reduces the vulnerability of the poor. The above are precisely the prescription of Swami. Swami holds that Bharat is richly endowed and can provide for the legitimate wants of all her people, but not forever expanding or limitless desires. And therefore he has given us the program of putting a ceiling on our desires. Similarly, he is cautioning us against misuse of nature's gifts by over-exploitation and misuse of money. He shows us by his own exemplary life the role of utter selflessness in reaching out to the poor and neglected. The antidote to personal aggrandizement is selfless service. By establishing excellent hospitals which provide free medical care, he has demonstrated how one's altruism will render such service possible. His altruism stands self-proclaimed and does not need others' encomium. He shows that his selfless service is an expression of his universal love, a love that knows no limit or boundaries, a love that knows no discrimination on any ground whatsoever. By setting up schools and a university which provides free education, he has demonstrated again the possibility of such a venture worthy of emulation by people who have as their cherished goal provision of good education for the poor and the underprivileged. By undertaking projects which provide protected and safe drinking water to a large number of poor people in backward districts of the state, he has again demonstrated that if there is a firm resolve on the part of the service provider, be it a government or private organization, then it is well within the realm of possibility. What could be the reason for Bhagwan's launching drinking water supply projects? The answer is obvious. It is because water is basic to sustaining life. In the modern world, it is the poor who lack access to safe drinking water. It is therefore imperative that safe drinking water is made available to the poor rural people. It is evident that it is concern for the poor people that has prompted him to spend significant sums of money on drinking water supply projects. That concern is once again an expression of his universal love that encompasses all and which flows spontaneously without expecting anything in return. How do people who talk of economic planning to provide basic necessity such as water or minimum healthcare or education react? Do they take these visible expressions of high-class economic service as instances of good planning, effective implementation, and optimal management? Perhaps. But do they also think of these services as not merely economic solutions, but as noble examples of selfless love with a universal message, a message which goes beyond treating human beings as economic agents or political animals, but as embodiments of the divine who should grow to their full stature? I really wonder. It's passing strange how Bhagwan, who is beyond time, sets much more store by doing things in time. He has no time to waste. Time waste, he says, is life waste. Not for him, therefore, is the endless talk of how to improve the lot of the poor and the downtrodden, which is the stock in trade of economists and public men. For him, it is ceaseless action to alleviate the sufferings of people, to help them face life with courage and fortitude, to encourage them to move forward despite hardships, to hold each other's hands through their life's vicissitudes, and to live the day to face the morrow. In a world which is clearly, plainly, and visibly beset with seemingly endless problems, Swami is physically present, and his presence extends assurance that we can overcome them. We need to take the first steps. Those first steps ought to be in the direction of demanding less from the world and doing more for the world. That should not be difficult. In the presence of the one who does not demand anything at all and who does it all silently for the world. So much of our lives are lost in debating economic ideologies, political philosophies, and wasteful institution building. Instead, our lives need to be repaired by doing selfless service in a spirit that such service done to our fellow human beings is service done to God. Truly, our God, Lord Sai, serves his creation, and what better testimony can we give than to do service to his creation in the spirit that such service is indeed our service to our God, Lord Sai. Again, let me quote from T.S. Eliot, "The Lord who created must wish us to create and employ our creation again in his service, which is already his service in creating." The problems of the world will continue to be problems. We cannot solve them in the abstract. We can solve some or a few of them only by the process of identification with the sufferers. And that process of identification, as Swami teaches us, can only be through a spiritual outlook, which sees God in all and all in God. All attempts at solving the problems of the world at a physical or intellectual level will be fractured because they are treated as others' problems and not our own. Because of his universal awareness, consciousness and love, Swami solves the problems by treating such problems as his own and not of others. To the extent that we treat more and more people as our own by spiritually bringing them in our fold, we move more and more towards Bhagwan. Such an approach is a twin blessing because it makes our lives worthwhile and takes us closer to our Creator. This is realizable only when, as Swami says, I and you become we, because of his universal awareness, consciousness and love. And then there is no more separateness. We need to attain the state about which Sri Aurobindo, the mystic poet, speaks. And let me quote, I know that knowledge is a vast embrace. I know that every being is myself. In every heart is the hidden myriad one. I know the calm transcendent bears the world, the wheel inhabitant, the silent Lord. I feel his secret act, his intimate fire. I hear the murmur of the cosmic voice. I know my coming was a wave from God. Conceiving terrestrial paradise in economic and emotional terms will be a non-starter because we continue to look at the world through external sight. Earth can become paradise only as we start looking at the world through, as the poet says, the inward eye. There is no paradise out there. It is in here, in everyone's spiritual heart. This knowledge is to be regained so that we understand what Swami wants us to understand, namely, that we are made of his stuff, that is, his divine essence. We need to go beyond the currently understood knowledge society to enter into the true knowledge society, which Swami envisions, in which separateness gives way to unity, pollution is overcome by purity, and human frailty is transformed into exalted divinity. Thank you.
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard Mr. K. Chakravarti read out his article, The World and the Presence, that he had written for a special volume of Sai Sparshan in the year 2005. This self-reflection was recorded at the Radio Sai Studios on the 17th of October 2016. Today's reading was the fifth in a series of self-reflections, a special program in honor of the 91st birthday celebrations of Bhagwan Baba. Mr. K. Chakravarti is a long-standing devotee of Bhagwan Baba and a member of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. And in this series, Self-Reflection, he reads out articles that he had penned for various commemorative volumes published during landmark birthday celebrations of Bhagwan Baba over a period of 26 years, from 1990 to 2016. Dear listeners, we look forward to your feedback to this special presentation. You can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you for your company, and please continue to stay tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony, coming to you from Prashanti Nilayam, India. Sai Ram.
Listen to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Ride the waves of divine ecstasy and experience the deep joy and bliss of Sai Bhajans. To celebrate the 91st year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent, Sai Blossom presents Bhajan Medley Volume 2, a collection of high-energy congregational music to evoke sublimity, devotion, and a deep connect with divinity. Let's purify our hearts, homes and environment with Bhajan Medley Volume 2. Available at Sai Blossom Stores Prashanti Nilayam from November 2016. A loving offering by Team Radio Sai at the lotus feet of our Lord, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. We are coming to you live from the abode of the Purna Avatar, the Valley of Supreme Peace, Prashanti Nilayam, located in Puttaparthi, Andhra Pradesh, India, the happy and happening town that is also my home and my heaven. You just heard the fifth episode of Self-Reflection by Mr. K. Chakravarti. Now, before I play for you the conclusion of the Tryst with Divinity with Mr. G. Jagannathan of the USA, I'm happy to announce the answer to today's question and the names of those listeners who responded with the right answer. Baba says, Christmas is the celebration associated with a lot of joy. Joy stands for J-O-Y. J for Jesus, O for others, and Y for yourself. He urges us to always place Jesus, who in this case represents for us God, God first, others second, and ourselves third. So basically, Baba reminds us that Christmas is about selflessness, about rejigging our priority list in life and just trying to get over ourselves. I, me, mine must be replaced by God, others, and then only I. And that would make our world so wonderful if each of us could try and get that right. Now, I'm happy to announce the names of the listeners who got all the answers right. Rekha Loknath from Mysore, Karnataka, India. Congratulations. Geeta and Venkat Sundar from Madurai, Tamil Nadu, India. From Mumbai, India, a family of Sai School and University alumni, Sai Sudha Sasi Kumar, Sai Divya Sasi Kumar, and Sai Mohan Sai Kumar. Congratulations to the entire family, Kumar family, and all of them, interestingly, two are from the Satya Sai Higher Secondary School alumni, and Sai Sudha is from my alma mater. She is also a fellow alumna from the Anandpur campus of the Sai University. Sunita Menon from Bahrain, Mr. G. Jagannathan from Fremont, California, USA, and Mr. Jagannathan, thank you for participating, and you will be listening to the conclusion of your interview with my colleague Bishu very shortly. Right here on Asia Stream. Purna Janki Raman from Sharjah. Ajay Rajan from Chennai, India. And yes, Ajay, you've asked me a question if it's okay to drop by when you're in Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, all of you are welcome to come to Radio Sai Studios for a tour where, as and when you feel like it, whenever you are in town. All you have to do is to show up around, a good time would be 10:30, 11 after morning bhajan, and ask our manager or any of my colleagues if you can have a tour. And if the studio is not being at that moment being used for recording, we also will invite you into the studio to see the entire setup. So you're very welcome, and we look forward to welcoming you, Ajay. Rukmani Ramachandran from Mulund, Mumbai. Congratulations, Rukmani. Thank you for participating. And of course, Sai Krishna from Hyderabad, Telangana, India. All your answers were right. Congratulations to all of you. And Sai Krishna, thank you for participating. He's such a regular, Ajay Rajan. Some of the names I read out, they're almost part of the Radio Sai family now, because they're always participating in all our quizzes and programs and sending us feedback. And we really appreciate you taking the time to connect with us. So thank you very, very much for that. And now, dear sisters and brothers, it's time for the conclusion of part 3 of my colleague, Bishop Rushdie's Tryst with Divinity interview with Mr. G. Jagannathan of Fremont, California, USA. I beg your pardon. We haven't taken over California yet, of USA. Please enjoy this conversation, and do remember to send in your feedback by email to this morning's episode of Morning Glory and to any other Radio Sai programs. As always, you can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. Till we meet next Thursday, I wish you well. May Swami bless, protect, and guide us to be loving and good human beings with good, pure intentions and strong determination. Jai Sai Ram, and please enjoy the rest of the show.
In fact, I remember very recently, I think in 2014, there was a research done by Harvard, by some scholars in Harvard, yeah, where they said that the most successful managers now are the managers who are humble.
Yes.
Humility as a differentiating critical factor.
Critical factor, yes.
In leadership.
Yeah. Strategic advantage.
Strategic advantage.
But if the leaders are very humble and they exhibit humility, it's a very, very important factor. Yes.
And that's what contributes to a group where each person feels that he is unique.
Yes.
And each person at the same time feels that he belongs to a group.
Correct.
Only if the leader,
yes,
is someone who is humble.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And another occasion, you know, it so happened I was traveling from Calcutta to Bombay. And in the same flight was Mr. J.R.D. Tata also.
Mm-hmm.
And he, and in those days, he was not taking the Tata's own aircrafts or all that. I don't know whether we had those aircrafts at that time or not. But he was traveling by Indian Airlines. And we both landed at the airport. And he was picking up his bag from the belt. So I bent down and said, "Sir, let me help you." He says, No. I will carry my own bag." Now, when you were trying to carry my bag here, but you know why I was trying to tell you, no, please don't carry the bag. I will carry it myself. This is the lesson I saw in that octogenarian who was trying to lift his own bag and carry it all the way up to the gate and waiting for his car to come. And the same thing I saw with Mr. Ratan Tata also.
Oh.
Yes, and we both were at the same airport at the same time, and we're waiting for our bags, and the bags arrived, and I went to pick him up, pick up his bag and try to help him. He says, no, Jagannathan, I will help myself. Please, don't do that.
Wow.
And he carried his own bag. He never waited for anybody to help him. He just carried his bag and walked out. So what I'm saying is these people are very simple, extremely humble, and they exhibit humility in every walk of life. Every moment they show their humility.
And that is what takes it to Himalayan
so
heights.
Great. Yes, they are really great.
Yeah.
And another thing that which I have seen with some of the leaders is their ability to engage and care for their employees.
Mm.
You know, I'll share one anecdote here. Dr. Jamshed Irani, when he was the managing director of the company, I used to work in the value engineering department, and under one Mr. Ashok Pandit, he was the chief of industrial engineering. That time, it so happened, I used to play squash at the Beldi court, mm-hmm, at the squash court. And I was trying to take my two kids also to the squash court and train them up, teach them how to play and all that. And that particular day, what happened was suddenly the lights went off. And if in a squash court it goes off, you can imagine it's absolutely dark.
Mm.
There is no way any light can penetrate into the court area. So I was very careful. I said my small children are with me. So I held their hands and we very carefully walked out of the door. And as we stepped out, there was a trench. For some reason, they had dug up the place and it had rained heavily. And I slipped and broke my ankle bone.
Oh my God.
I was more worried about my children. So I said, you all guys wait. And I somehow got up, went to the car, drove the car, went home. I knew that there is something wrong with my leg.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't put the brake because it was on my left leg.
Mm-hmm.
It was on my left leg. But then I was very pain. It was paining. But I didn't realize it had swelled also.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all in the heat of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I took care of the children. I went home. When I washed my legs, I found it was big. My legs had really swollen.
Mm.
So my wife looked at it and said, my God, we have to rush to the doctor. So we went to the doctor and he said, this is definitely a fracture. So he said, let me put a small bandage and tomorrow we will take x-ray and actually look at the fracture and take care. And he said, if it's a fracture, it will be 6 weeks of bed rest, complete bed rest. So next day morning we went. And it was a fracture, so he put the plasters and all that. Dr. Sengupta was the orthopedic guy, and he did that, and I was at home, bed rest. I get a call from Dr. Irani's office, one Mr. Krishna Rao, who is his personal assistant.
Mm-hmm.
He called me and said, Jagannathan, boss wants you in the office immediately. So I said, but this is what has happened. I told him yesterday, this is what happened, and today I'm under plaster. I'm on bed rest. What do I do? I will not be able to move. I cannot come to the office. So he said, oh, is that right? Then let me speak to the boss. So on the intercom, he calls Dr. Irani, who was sitting inside. He says, sir, Jagannathan says that he has got a fractured ankle and he cannot move. For 6 months, 6 weeks, he will be bedridden. So he is not able to come to the office. So I can hear on the other phone, boss is telling him, ask him whether I can visit his house.
Oh my God.
So he says, boss is wanting to know whether he can come. I said, of course, he's most welcome. So he says, okay, he will come in the next 1 hour's time. He will come. So I told my wife that boss is coming home. So she said, okay, so what do we do? And within 5 minutes, another call comes saying that he's going to come with his wife and Daisy Irani is also going to come with him.
Mm-hmm.
And please don't prepare any meal or anything because it was the lunch time at that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he's going to have South Indian coffee at your home.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. So when he mentioned South Indian coffee, I knew that he's not going to come to sack me. if he's coming to sack me, then he will not have South Indian coffee at my home at least. So I said, that's good. So we will be, you know, ready for that. So he comes home and he says, what is this? What has happened to you? So I told him what happened and all that. Then he tells me, you know, why I wanted to see you was I wanted to promote you as the chief of total quality and reengineering. I liked your note on combining these two functions together. And I was wondering who will head this function, none other than you. So would you like to accept this promotion and take charge? I mean, imagine. I said, of course, sir, it will be my pleasure. And he said, you will be in my office and reporting to the principal executive officer, but for all practical purposes, you will be reporting to me. And this is the assignment that I have in mind. But now that you have a broken ankle, you take rest, and I will issue the office order. But then as soon as you are ready, take charge of this job. Now, look at this managing director who comes home to tell me whether you would you like to accept this promotion or not.
Wow.
I mean, that is something amazing. I mean, this is a quality which is, you know, unheard of.
Absolutely.
When I put this in my blog, in my, you know, LinkedIn, people all responded. So many people responded saying that you have been very lucky to have a boss like that. And this is divine grace, I would say.
Yes.
And Dr. Irani himself was a Swami's devotee.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he has come here twice or thrice, and Swami has blessed him, given him Pada Namaskar and all that, and so that is the way it is.
Yes, yeah. I think amazing. I think, you know, as you narrate this, what I'm reminded of is, you know, when Bhagwan started the MBA course here, on August 21st, 1986, Swami said, in the Sai Institute, we are attaching special importance to cultural and ethical values.
Yes.
And among these, the primary place is to be given to Indian ethos and values.
Yes.
And Swami said the course will cover such matters as the Indian economic environment, personal management, organization behavior, business communication. And then he said, emphasis will be laid on personal management and human values, which do not figure very much in the courses in other management institutes.
Exactly.
And I think this was something which Bhagwan always stressed.
Yes.
And he, in fact, called the MBA here
as a man management.
As a man management course.
Absolutely.
And I think all those managers who really become great leaders are people who are great man managers.
Absolutely. Because you see, what is an organization? Organization is made up of people, machines, processes, and so on. Now, who selects the machines? It is the person. It is the leaders and and the people. They select the machines. Who decides the processes in the organization? It is the people who decide the process. If the people are not good, you have bad processes, bad machines, you know, selected with selfish interest and so on. So people have to be not only good, but they have to be happy.
I think that is
that's most important.
That's
that. The employees have to be happy and good and have extremely very high values in the organization. Then only they can be happy.
Yes.
Happy people always turn out excellent work.
I think, you know, this is a new dimension in the sense that a boss can think, and what is my business to see whether he's happy or sad? All my job is he should deliver what he has to deliver. you know, I'm not concerned about what is happening to his life otherwise.
Correct, yes.
But I think that is where we are missing out completely.
Completely, and the most important point is, unless I'm feeling happy, I'm not going to be able to deliver what is expected of me. Yes. Not only expected of me, but if I'm happy, I will be able to deliver much more than what is expected of me.
I mean, it seems apparently illogical that, you know, happiness will contribute to revenue stream, but actually that is what it is truly.
It is true, absolutely. And in fact, there was an empirical study done by IBM, their AS400 division. That was one of the companies which had won the Malcolm Baldrige Award way back in the year 19... the whole thing started in 1988. I think they won it in 2000. The AS400 division, one of the 18 divisions of IBM. Now, they had 10 years data on various factors which influence the growth of the organization. So, they found that it is the employee satisfaction which actually triggers the series of positiveness in the organization, which helps the organization to grow. So they had a formula which was developed based on actual data that if the employee satisfaction goes up by 1%, by what percent will the organizational growth take place? Now, why this is important is, none of the market factors are under the control of the organization. The competition, you can't control. You can't control the policies of the government. You can't control how the economy will take place. You can't control the share market. You can't control any of these things. You can't control the customers. Because customers are the king. They will dictate what they want and how they want and when they want and how much money they want to pay and so on. And yet you want to grow. Right? So they found that the only factor which you have under your control is your employee satisfaction. And if I can help that satisfaction, the employee engagement will go up. And employee engagement will go up only when they are happy. When they are happy, they will engage with the organization. And when they engage with the organization, obviously the growth of the organization is also ensured. And that, I don't remember the formula right now, but this is what it was in IBM, and they had done this study, and we had benchmarked with the IBM AS400 division way back in 1997 when I was in, you know, Tata Steel, and they showed us all this, saying that how employees are the most important thing in the whole business of excellence.
Wow. Amazing.
Amazing, really. And when I tell this this one to people here, not everybody reacts in a very positive way. And those companies which have not reacted positively, they are still struggling in finding out how to be excellent.
Wow.
Whereas those who have identified this, they are already on the excellent path.
Yeah.
I think their results are so good.
Exactly. I think I'm just reminded of, you know, how Bhagwan used to always say, you know, even a doctor, you should not look at the patient as a disease. You should look at the person as a whole.
As a whole, holistic treatment.
As a holistic
important.
Treatment. You know, you yes. can't think that, oh, a diabetic has come to me.
Yes.
Or, you know, this fractured leg has come to me.
Yeah.
Who has come to me is a patient.
Yes.
But the way Bhagwan asks us, if you are following CIA, you have to think that Bhagwan has come.
Correct.
Exactly.
And I think if your boss thinks that the employee is God, and the employee thinks that the boss is God, then there's been no question of you not doing anything for the other person's happiness.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They say God, life laughs at us when we are unhappy. Life smiles at us when we are happy,
yes.
But life salutes us when we are contributing to making others' lives happy.
Exactly, exactly.
And I think
like there is a Sufi saying, it says, if you want to be happy for 1 hour, then have a good nap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be happy for 1 day, then go for a picnic or something like that. You enjoy with the family and all that. If you want to be happy for 1 month, then get married. And if you want to be happy for 1 year, then win a lottery or something like that.
Mm.
But if you want to be happy for the whole life, then make others happy.
Yes.
And if you want to be happy for eternally, that means for all the lives to be together, then you discover yourself.
Yes.
When you discover yourself, because you are bliss.
Yes.
The essence is that you are bliss.
Yes.
And when you discover yourself, then you know that I'm the happiest person in the whole world.
When you stop searching for happiness.
Yes, when you stop searching and you realize that you are happiness.
You are happiness.
You are happiness.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
So,
amazing.
That's a very beautiful thing.
Amazing. Fantastic. Yeah. And happiness, so beautifully Bhagwan always stressed that happiness is union with God.
Yes, that's right. Right.
That sort of sums it up.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yes.
Well, it's been a long conversation, but there are so many more things that I want to talk to you. Maybe I'll just take a few minutes. You know, we talked so much about value engineering, you know, in your corporate space. And, you know, all of us in the SAI organization and devotees, we also have been hearing about values so much. You know, you have SSC classes, we talk about values, and here education and human values, and Bhagwan talks about human values. So are these two very different things?
In the sense that in the corporate world, when we talk of value analysis, value engineering, we are really looking at from the customer's perspective. Are we providing value to the customers through our products and services? For example, when we manufacture a car and give it to the customer, are we providing the true value to the customer in terms of how do we provide value? That does it give him the satisfaction or the performance that he expects out of the car at a price which is reasonable for him.
Mm-hmm.
So value here is actually performance. It's a ratio of the performance expected by the customer to the cost he has paid for that expected performance.
Mm-hmm.
So you can enhance value by reducing the
cost.
By reducing the denominator.
Yeah.
Or by increasing the performance at the same cost, or by increasing the performance at such a rate that even if there is a small cost increase, the customer doesn't mind about it. So these are the ways by which the value can be enhanced. But usually what happens is people do cost reduction without remembering that they are actually expected to provide value to the customer. So they do cost cutting. Oh, this is extra, we just remove this knob. Can we do without the, why this handle is 6 inches? Why not make it 4 inches? that may be very inconvenient to the actual user. Okay, now imagine the pressure cookers. So in India, not every pressure cooker is very user friendly. Sometimes the steel handles, when you put it on the stove or the heater, it becomes very hot.
Very hot.
You can't even remove it.
Yeah.
And now there is a wooden covering given. The wooden cover starts burning.
Yes.
Because it is so close to the flame.
Yes.
So it doesn't help, and then it becomes very loose.
Yes.
So these are some of the things, aspects which we look at in the science of value engineering. We say, hey, you are providing a handle, but that handle should have a fireproof cladding over that steel handle, so that it doesn't burn. At the same time, it doesn't transmit heat. So those functions are very important.
Wow.
So there are something called the basic function and the secondary functions. For example, if you buy a soap in the shopping complex, why is the wrapping required? It is not going to clean your body or clean the hands or clean anything. But the wrapper is required because it improves the aesthetic sense. It prevents the fragrance from going out. It protects the soap by itself. But the soap is the one which actually provides the function of cleaning.
Yes.
So we distinguish between the basic function and the secondary functions. And there are so many unnecessary functions in any product. Without the knowledge of the designer or because of technology limitations, these things enter. For example, you have a projector, okay, an LCD projector, which we connect to the laptops. Everybody is using that. Now, the LCD projector has got a bulb which gets heated up very fast, right?
Yes.
And the whole housing is made of some kind of a plastic material. If that bulb is allowed to remain on for a long time, switched on for a long time, the housing can start melting because of the heat. But then you provide a fan to cool and make sure that the housing is stable, it remains, and all of the contents of that projector remains intact. Now, what is the function of the projector? Is to throw image on the screen. Right?
Yes.
Is to project image on the screen. What is the function of the fan? Is to remove heat. Now, we are not interested in that removal of heat.
Yes.
Which is an unnecessary function.
Yes.
So the cost associated with the fan, with the mounting, with the brackets, with all that, and the power consumed,
yes,
is all actually not fulfilling the function of projecting image.
Yes.
Right? If we can project image in a way that the system doesn't get heated in some way,
yes,
then that is the best. We are yet to develop that technology where the bulb doesn't heat up. So this is a technology limitation. But in the actual designs, you will find that there are so many unnecessary things which are built in the products or in the service, which is unnecessary, which can be eliminated. And the unnecessary costs are essentially due to wrong beliefs, wrong things, and because of habits and attitudes,
yes,
and so on. So there are several reasons for
yes.
that.
Yeah.
And for example, we had a channel where the chains used to be moving, and people thought the chains will move better if we lubricate the entire channel. Okay. On the contrary, when the lubrication was done, the chains were slipping.
Oh.
They were not able to move. So it was a very jerky and sudden movements of the whole track which was happening. So, and this is a wrong belief that more the lubrication, better will be the movement. So that's a wrong belief, but you have to be aware of this when we are designing the products and processes and how we maintain our products and things like that. So when we look at all these things and analyze, so it's a great scientific tool,
yes,
which analyzes the unnecessary elements in yes. the functions and eliminates them, if not at least minimize
yes.
those costs,
yes,
and thus increasing the value for the customer.
Wow. In fact, as I think about value engineering now, And if I try to map that with the human values that Bhagwan always talks about, I see that if we consider the aspect of, say, dharma, you know, Bhagwan says, what is dharma? It is love in action.
Yes.
What is truth? It is love in speech.
Yes.
So, if a person who is working, if there is love in his heart,
yes,
for the customer,
yes,
then you know he will try to ensure he will not need a value engineer to come and tell him,
correct,
that you know the handle should be long.
Yes,
the handle should not be in such a manner that it hurts the user when she's lifting out of the cooker.
Absolutely.
So if there is love for the act and love for the person who will use,
yes,
then automatically
all these
value engineering happens.
Happens. Yes, absolutely, absolutely right. Very, very true. That love is the fundamental basis on which the whole thing is built. And if we can have love at our heart, in our hearts, and put it in action, think through love, speak through love, and act through love, everything is bathed in love.
Yes.
Then what emanates is a completely value-engineered activity.
Yeah, we would all be value-engineered persons.
Yes, yes.
Delivering maximum satisfaction to Swami.
Yes, yes, of course, of course.
Yeah.
There is always a spiritual dimension to everything that we do.
Yes.
And unfortunately, not many people realize this. When the individuals work for themselves.
Yes.
Like, you know, today I was talking about excellence at work to the students here, that the work can be at the individual level, at the same individual as a family member, the same individual as a corporate member, the same individual as a member of the society. And he not only has different roles to perform, but he also, as even within himself, his body is working, his mind is working, his intellect is working. And there is a spiritual dimension.
Yes.
Which is absolutely calm and quiet. It's not working. Because it is true love. And at that level, there is no work. Work just gets done automatically.
Yeah, yeah.
Maya adhyakshena prakatihi suyate sacharacharam.
Yes.
So with me as the center, yes, the prakriti does its job automatically.
Yeah.
Everything works, flows automatically. So nothing has to be done. So God remains absolutely unattached, detached, and He's just there, observing, witnessing, and everything happens so beautifully.
Love.
Most efficiently.
Most efficiently.
Look at the cosmos.
Yes.
It's a classic example of perfection.
Yes.
And why does the earth rotate on its own?
Yes.
And at the same speed, at the same time, and the same thing, without a mistake. One microsecond mistake will cause chaos in the whole cosmos, right?
He's reminded of the saying that Bhagwan used to mention so much. He used to say, duty without love, deplorable.
Yes.
And duty with love is desirable. But love without duty is divine.
Yes, absolutely.
And
yes,
that's what we see in Bhagwan, you know.
Yes, correct.
It is just love for the sake of love.
For the sake of love, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, as we are talking about this, I was just reminded how Bhagwan also used to play with this word MBA and say it is mind on Baba always. And that is what is constant integrated awareness.
Yes.
You know, and I think, you know, it might sound to someone that it's so spiritualistic and it is so religious, you know, business is something else. Don't mix Baba and business.
Yeah.
But now, you know, if you're talking about a value engineered business to give maximum customer satisfaction.
Correct.
If that is what is the goal of the organization, to deliver value, then ultimately it is...
Yes, there's this...
What you need is mind and Baba always. This is basically, you should fill your mind with love.
Correct, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm today convinced, after so many years of my industry experience, more than 41 years, out of which half of it has been spent on business excellence, the model is inefficient today. When I look back,
looking at Swami's teachings and messages and reflecting the Swami's messages and putting it on top of the business excellence models of Baldrige or EFQM and other things, it is highly inadequate,
inadequate.
I feel, because the emphasis on people and values is much, much more which we have to give.
Correct.
And the happiness of people has to be given the top priority.
Mm.
And all other things, you know, the processes and other things will all follow.
Yes.
And the unfortunate part is, you know, today somebody asked me a very good question. He says, you mentioned about Swami's messages and you also mentioned about business excellence models which give weightage of 45% to the results and 55% for the process. And you also mentioned about karma yoga, that you work with an, you know, nishkama karma and so on. So what is, which one is correct? I said,
okay, you're saying concentrate on results, but at the same time saying don't worry about the results, leave the results to God.
Yeah. So how is there a conflict? I said, you really caught me on the correct foot.
Mm.
And this is exactly, now personally, if you ask me, yes, there is a mistake. I said, in that case, the EFQM model, which gives 50% weightage to results and 50% to the enablers, and Baldrige is slightly better because they give 45% weightage to the results,
mm.
Less weightage to the results. But actually, we should give much, much less weightage, no weightage at all to the results. Results will follow.
Mm.
Let us concentrate on the enablers.
Mm.
Let us concentrate on the process.
Mm.
The approach and deployment is much, much more important.
Mm.
Than the results.
Yes.
And if we can have a new model of excellence.
Yes.
Based on Swami's, you know, teachings, what the Gita says.
Yes.
And how can we bring in that kind of equanimity.
Yes.
In the minds of the leaders.
Yes.
And the people who are reporting to them and working.
Yes.
And how can we bring the attitude of samarpan.
Yes.
Samta.
Yes.
And asang, that means the detachment from the process itself.
Yes.
And accepting whatever comes to us as a prasad.
Yes.
If we can have that,
yes.
That's the best.
Yes.
And people are very scared to accept this as a philosophy and run their life to that.
Mm.
But I think ultimately people will realize.
Yeah.
They will realize,
yes.
That it's not, because the results are not under your control at all.
Absolutely.
Something happens and some other, yes. You know, result comes in. Invariably this happens.
Yeah, I mean, best of your strategies,
yes.
And best of your talent might sometimes not give the results that
not
you
at all, not
expect.
At all. I have seen this happening time and again. You know, one of the companies where I was responsible for strategy, also along with business excellence, I must say this, that I told the CEO and the chief operating officer that, look, we don't require a strategy at all in this company. The opportunity to grow is so much.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you want a strategy? All that we need is a good execution. Relentless pursuit of excellence in execution. Let us execute whatever we undertake. If it is a product design, let us do the best of designs. People will come to us. Why are they not coming? Because we are not yet there.
Whatever we are doing, we are not doing it well.
We are not doing it well, and we are not there for the people to see that we are doing a great job.
Mm.
So let's not waste our time in strategy planning and spending our time, offline,
yeah.
you know, going to exotic places and having lavish
meetings.
Dinners and so on. It doesn't help at all.
Help.
And right enough, the company is even today struggling.
Mm.
Despite so many meetings,
mm.
So many stalwarts of strategies have been involved, consultants have been involved, called, you know, the best world consultants are very involved. But still nothing works because the basic things are not set right.
Mm.
That execution has to be there, which means look at the processes, look at how you are doing it. How part of it is more important than focusing just on, oh, I have to grow from 400 million to 600 million. It is just the daydreaming. But unless you start working,
yes.
And dirty your hands and
yes.
Start doing,
yes.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Swami also says, my messages you have heard, Shravanam is good, then Mananam has to take place.
Yes.
And then,
yes.
You know, Nididhyasanam.
Yes.
That has to be put in practice. Unless you practice, it's not going to happen. Yeah.
Fantastic. In fact, when you were talking about these results, what I remembered is in one conversation with a student, he also asked this question to Swami. Swami, you are saying that, you know, we should not be concerned about the results, should not be concerned about the future. Then how, what is the motivation for us to work? And Swami said, see, if you want a fruit, you have to plant the seed, the tree, and, you know, allow time for the seed to germinate and the tree to happen in 10 years, 15 years. I am not saying that you should not plant the seed and grow the tree.
Correct.
You have to work for it.
You have to work.
But after 10 years, whether the fruit happens the way you want it or not, that is God's... Well, that is not in your hands.
Correct.
So you should be willing to accept the results. Correct. Don't be attached to the results, but work for the results.
Yes,
everyone need to work for the results.
Exactly. Every karma has to be performed.
Yes.
And they will surely have some results.
Yeah. But whatever results,
whatever results come, you have to accept.
You have to accept. Yes, I think to be attached to the work, but not to the results.
Correct.
I think, of course, yes, it becomes kind of, it becomes a philosophical and spiritual, but I think that is what also will ensure employees' happiness.
Absolutely.
And employees' happiness is critical factor for business excellence.
Absolutely. Yes.
Fantastic.
And the latest research by one Mr. Sean Aker, he's the most famous talker in the TED Talks.
Yes.
If you just Google for TED Talks and Sean Aker, there are a series of talks that he has given. And his research, which spread over 12 years in 42, across 42 countries, shows that happiness and excellence go together.
Wow.
And it is the happy people who create excellence.
Excellence.
And this is a fact.
Yes.
And he says, look, join the happy people's group.
Yes.
And because we have got certain mirror neurons, he says.
Yes.
Which start reflecting. Where what you see.
Yes.
So if you see a happy face.
Yes.
Automatically those mirror neurons tell you.
Yes.
Hey, you have to be happy too.
Yes.
So you become happy.
Yes.
When you see a smiling face.
Yes.
You do have to smile.
Yes.
I mean, there is no question about it, because those neurons tell you to smile back.
Yes. Yes.
And he does a small experiment and so on and shows that. And so all the neurosciences also now tend to prove what our age-old rishis and munis have realized thousands of years back.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, as you're saying that now slowly there is a realization for it.
Yes.
You know, the World Youth Festival just concluded a week ago.
Yeah.
As part of the Guru Purnima celebrations, and you had one of the speakers was one Mr. Hariranjan Rao, who is who works in the office of the Chief Minister of Madhya Pradesh.
Okay.
He's an IAS officer. And, you know, he mentioned how in Madhya Pradesh, now the Chief Minister decided to start a Department of Happiness.
Wow.
That was something new.
Yes.
So people, I mean, a government will not think about having a Department of Happiness if they do not think that that is really going to contribute tangibly.
Very good. Excellent.
To the output and the results that the government is seeking.
Right.
So I think there is definitely a realization.
Yeah. If you listen to Sean's one of the conversations with the Google people, Google has got a position called happy good fellow. they have a position called happy good fellow.
Wow.
So this guy is introducing Sean, saying Sean, a happy good fellow, is introducing another happy good fellow by name Sean. So that's a very interesting talk, which one can see.
Fantastic.
Reinforcing the fact that happiness is very, very important.
Very important.
And Google does anything to make their employees happy.
Wow. And Swami also does anything to make us happy.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
I remember that incident where, you know, Swami had saved James Sinclair from a crash, air crash. You know, his flight went out of fuel and miraculously he was saved. And it's a big story. But finally, when he came to the interview room, he told Swami, tell me, I want to do something for you. Anything, Swami. I mean, you have saved my life. And, you know, anything you tell, I want to do something for you, Swami. Please. Swami said, really, will you do? Can you do? Yes, Swami, tell me, you want to, because he was very, very, very well endowed person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Swami said, tell me whatever, anything I will give, Swami. Swami said, will you really? He said, yes, Swami. Swami said, okay, then just do this for me. Be happy. Yes. Wonderful. I think the avatar came and is still there with us. Yes. All the time.
Very, very much.
Just
very
so much. That we learn to be happy in this beautiful, happy world that is created for all of us.
Right.
And I want to thank Swami for these happy moments today that he has granted me to converse with you. And I just hope that, you know, it is one more tiny effort in this whole scheme of things to make the world a happy place and a better place.
Thank you very much. I must take this opportunity to thank Swami for giving me this opportunity, and I'm sure he will continue to bless all of us and make this Samasta Loka really Sukhino Bhavantu.
Sukhino Bhavantu. Yes. Thank
samasta
you so
loka,
much.
Sukhino Bhavantu.
Sai
Ram.
Sai Ram.
Vaheguru, Vaheguru ji bolo. Vaheguru ji bolo. Satyanam ji bolo. Satyanam bolo. Satyanam ji bolo. Nityan japiye tere naam ji bolo. Nityan japiye. Satyanam ji bolo. Satyanam ji. Ram ji bolo. Bolo Rama ji bolo. Satyanam ji bolo. Krishna ji bolo. Krishna bol. Krishna ji bolo. Krishna nityan japiye Krishna naam ji bolo. Nityan japiye hari ji bolo. Bolo hari ji bolo. Satyanam ji bolo. Satyanam ji bolo. Govind jai Gopal jai. Govind jai Gopal jai. Radha Ramana Hari Govind jai. Govind jai Gopal jai. Govind jai Gopal jai. Govind jai Gopal jai. Bolo Govind jai Gopal jai. Govind jai Gopal jai. Govind jai Gopal jai. Radha Ramana Hari Govind jai. Vaheguru ji bolo. Vaheguru bolo. Vaheguru ji bolo. Satyanam ji bolo. Satyanam satyanam ji bolo. Satyanam 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 satyanam.
Ekamkar satyanam karta purak nirpar nirvair akal murt arjuni sevam guru prasad jap aad sach jugaad sach hai bhi sach नानक हो सी भी सच
guru vahe guru ji bolo
vahe guru vahe guru vahe guru ji bolo
satnam 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 ji bolo
satnam 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 ji bolo
nit nit japiye tere naam ji bolo
nit nit japiye tere naam ji bolo
satnam 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 ji bolo
satnam 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 ji bolo
ram 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 ram
Ram Ram Ram Ram Ram ji bolo
nit nit japiye Ram Ram ji bolo
nit nit japiye Ram Ram ji bolo
Krishna 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 ji bolo
Krishna 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 ji bolo
nit nit japiye Krishna Ram ji bolo
nit nit japiye Krishna Ram ji bolo